You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
So who's ready to recap the most hated draft in NFL history? And with that, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Lemps Talk and Pack. I'm your host, Chris Lempsis, coming to you once again from my basement Packer room in my home in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, here to break down day three of the 2020 NFL draft, the final day of the draft for our beloved Green Bay Packers. The Packers had six selections yesterday, Saturday. They did not make one single move up or down during the day, which came as a surprise to me. What comes as less of a surprise are the initial reactions from the national draft analysts regarding the Packers draft. It is almost universally despised. I'll just say draft grades, you know, they don't mean that much. They mean very little. They're just, I read them just for entertainment purposes. It's fun to hear, you know, and read other people's opinions on what the Packers did who aren't Packers fans. But yeah, it's been almost universally despised. The disgust is palpable from the national draft pundits and analysts. Before I begin, quick apologies. I know if you follow me on Twitter, I said I was going to be doing this last night. I didn't get to it, and the reason was I was exhausted. The draft just by the end of the draft, if you're a hardcore like I am and you're in all 3 days, you know, and then I was doing podcasts, I was on Twitter constantly during the draft. I was just burned out. I needed a night to sleep and kind of compile my thoughts and compose my thoughts before I sat down to do this. So yeah, the rundown for today, I'll be talking about the work turned in by General Manager Brian Gutekunst on day three. And then I'll be recapping the draft as a whole as far as what it means for the immediate and long-term future of the Packers. Before we get into the fun, got to do the quick shameless self-promotion. Twitter, LempsMKE, at It's Just Chris Now. I think the final unfollow count for the weekend was around 13 or 14. I gained, I think, like 5 or 6 followers and lost like 13 or 14. So yeah. Fans were not, I guess some people weren't happy with me keeping it real on there. What can you do? The Facebook, Old Bag of Donuts, OL Bag of Donuts. Now that the draft is over, I'm going to be putting up some more of my favorite Packers pictures, memes, some humorous stuff, hopefully give you a laugh. I hope anyway. And then the email is oldbagofdonuts, olbagofdonuts, @gmail.com. Any thoughts you have on this draft? Did you like it? Are you like, man, screw what the analysts are saying? Are you like, man, I hated this draft? Send them along. Drop me a line. I'd love to hear from you. And if you're listening on the wonderful Packers Talk iTunes page, leave a rating. 5 stars, 4 stars. Me likey those the most. Maybe a comment. Chris, great job throughout the weekend. Love all your pre-draft stuff. If it's negative, keep that shit to yourself. I don't want to hear it. I'm too fragile. Okay. Now that we've done, got that out the way, let's dive right into discussing the 6 day 3 selections made by the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay opened the day by selecting... Oh, this one. This one. How much did this warm your old pal Lemps's heart, huh? They finally selected a Minnesota Gopher. Finally. I started going to the U. I transferred to the U in January of 05. My orientation there was literally the day after the Vikings beat the Packers at Lambeau in the playoffs, the infamous Randy Moss mooning game. That was fun, huh? Got off to a great start there in the Twin Cities. I transferred there in January of 05, and I graduated in December of 07. So my affiliation with the school, about 15 years now, a little over 15 years, they have not taken a single Minnesota Gopher. We had a punter that the Packers signed as an undrafted guy, Justin, I think it was something. Can't remember his name. It was a few years back. He was battling for the job in training camp, and he lost. But we've never actually had a Gopher picked by the Packers. Now, in fairness, most of the last 15 years have not been very good. Very mediocre to, you know, average, mediocre, whatever word you want to use. Hasn't been great. It's getting better now with PJ Fleck, but it hasn't been great. So I can't really blame the Packers for not looking at Minnesota as this treasure trove of talent. But, you know, now things are, again, getting better with Fleck. We got five guys drafted over the course of the weekend, which was near the top as far as collegiate programs. So it was good to see. And the Packers finally took one. Linebacker Kamal Martin, inside linebacker Kamal Martin, with its fifth-round pick, the 175th overall selection in the draft. Now, I was pretty bummed before the pick, I'm not going to lie, because as my guy, you know I love my guy Tyler Johnson. I thought for sure he was going to be a fourth-round pick. As he was falling through the fourth, I was going, maybe. Then it got in. Well, they're not going to be able to trade up yet. It got into the early fifth. I was like, come on, maybe now. Then when it got to like that middle part of the fifth round, I was like, the Packers absolutely have enough ammo here to move up and get him. Like, come on, do it, do it. And then when he was selected by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the middle of the fifth round, I was crushed. Crushed, because I know Aaron Rodgers would have loved throwing to him. And Jordan Love eventually would have loved throwing to him. I know Tom Brady's going to love throwing to him, I'll tell you that much. He's going to be a Brady favorite by the end of the season, you'll see. But I was crushed. And right when I was at my lowest, Gutekunst, and I was just cursing, not just that, but the whole weekend, and Brian Gutekunst, they threw me a line. They brought me back to life. They said, Chris, we know you're down. Let's bring you up. Let's take Kamal Martin. And I appreciated that. I do want to talk a little bit about Kamal. I should talk about him as a player, huh? Not just my excitement that they took him. Because you're like, is he good? Yeah, he's good. He reminds me, I'm not going to lie, he reminds me more than a little bit of Desmond Bishop. Right? The Packers, one of the inside linebackers on the 2010 Super Bowl team. They're very, to me, they're very similar. The more I started thinking about it and going back and watching old Desmond Bishop clips, I was going like, there's a lot of similarities here. Even in size. Kamal Martin, 6'3", 245 pounds, and Des Bishop was 6'2", 244. So really, I mean, they're almost exactly the same as far as physical stature. But also in terms of players, right? Martin plays with a violence, a physicality. There's a brutality that he plays with. He brings it, man. He brings the effort. The explosion is there, too. And you saw that both in, you know, you saw all those traits in Bishop once upon a time. Violence, physicality, explosion. I think you can blitz Kamal Martin the way they blitzed Bishop way back when. The Gophers did that from time to time. Now, if you look at Martin's numbers from last season, not eye-popping, 8 games played. He did miss some time with a knee injury, and he also opted to sit out the Gophers win in the Outback Bowl. I had to mention that they won because that was pretty sweet. Even though we should have been in the Rose Bowl, but they blew the Iowa and Wisconsin games, which I'm not going to talk about. Particularly the Iowa game is still a real heartbreaker for me. So in 8 games, he had 66 tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss, 1 sack, 2 forced fumbles, 2 picks. For his career as a Gopher, in 46 games, 13 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks, 4 picks, 4 forced fumbles. So, you know, not like eye-popping numbers, but I can tell you as a guy, I watched every game he played in college. I mean, he's a good player. He's a solid player. And I think he can cover, too. You might, if you hear anybody say he can't cover, be leery of that scouting report. I think he's pretty comfortable and smooth in coverage. He's pretty good at dropping back. It fits him. Now, I will say the one difference between he and Bishop, I don't know if he's quite as instinctive as Bishop was. And his tackling at times is a little inconsistent. That was something Dez was really good at. Really solid tackler. A little bit inconsistent. So there's some kinks in his game that need to be worked out. But I think there's talent there, you know? And I do want to mention, too, he was suspended for the Quick Lane Bowl, which is a bowl. It's in late December. It was right after Christmas, I believe, December of 2018. He was suspended for that. Never did find out why, of course. But, yeah, there's a lot to like there with Martin. I like him. I think he's a good player. The Packers then, shockingly, went offensive line with each of their 3 sixth-round picks. Hey, quick aside, can you get the jersey of a fifth-round pick at the pro shop? Asking for a friend. The friend is me. I'll tell you what. If Kamal Martin, if he's good, I am going to be so obnoxious about it. It's going to drive everybody insane. I want him to be, because I want every guy the Packers draft to be good. I want them all to be Hall of Famers, even though I know it's not possible. I'm really obviously rooting extra for this one. Okay, but I digress. The Packers then shockingly went offensive line with each of their 3 sixth-round picks. That's right. Green Bay went back to back to back at the position. The first of those offensive linemen, Michigan tackle John Runyon, was taken with the 192nd overall selection. 38 years old, and that pick made me feel old. I'm now at the point where guys I not grew up, it wasn't like I was a kid. I wasn't like in elementary school when John Runyon played. I was in college when John Runyon was playing and playing at a high level. And now his kid is being drafted by the Green Bay Packers. So that was an interesting development from the weekend. I feel older than ever now. Saying John Runyon and then referring to his dad as John Runyon Sr. just makes me feel old. Okay, so this was an interesting pick. Runyon is, hang on, I do have his particulars. Hold on. Runyon, 6'4", 306 pounds. He played offensive tackle for the Wolverines, but will almost assuredly be a guard in the pros. So right there, you got to like that. That's a plus. The Packers obviously love guys who can play multiple positions. I hate to begin with the bloodlines, because he's his own man, but that seems important. His dad was an offensive lineman, played at Michigan, like this, you know, like John Runyon now. I do think that's important. You know, if you play the same position as your dad, it's worth noting. Runyon is smart. Every offensive lineman, has a Michigan offensive lineman, first of all, has a Michigan offensive lineman ever been a bad investment? I know they haven't been quite as great under Harbaugh as people thought they'd be, but, I mean, it's offensive line you. It has been going back forever, for decades and decades. When has that ever been a piss-poor investment? I asked on Twitter, no one replied. I can't think of a single Wolverines lineman who's busted in the pros. If you can think of one, send it along, because you'd be blowing my mind. So, obviously, he's smart, right? Every offensive lineman who plays for Michigan is smart. You have to be smart to go to Michigan. He's a good athlete. He's tough. Now, tough, and he's mean. He's got that a little bit of that mean streak that his old man had. I don't know if he's quite as nasty as his old man. John Runyon Sr. was a mean son of a bitch. One of the meanest son of a bitches I've ever seen play. I say that as a positive. Also, his dad had a great cameo in an early episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, if you watch that show. So yeah, those are the positives, right? The bloodlines. He's smart. Good athlete. Tough. Now, the drawbacks, he does need to get a little stronger, I think. And I think he needs to hone his game a little bit more. There's some inconsistencies there. But I think he's an interesting project. I'll talk about these picks after I discuss them all and what they mean for the future, of course. But I like that pick. And then Green Bay then selected Oregon center Jake Hansen and Indiana tackle Simon Stepaniak. Hope I'm saying that last name right, with the 208th and 209th overall selections, respectively. Talk a little bit about Hansen first. I'll tell you what, when you study up on Jake Hansen, the scouting reports on this kid read an awful lot like the scouting reports on Corey Linsley from way back when. Right? Both sort of had the same things written about them. Smart, dependable, durable, great communicator, very strong. Good in short areas, good in that, you know, good in a phone booth. The negatives are the same too. Not super quick. Could struggle with quicker rushers, quicker D linemen. Those were things written about both Linsley and Hansen. I'll tell you what though, Corey Linsley has been a damn good player, so I'm feeling really good about that pick too. The more I watched of Jake Hansen, the more I liked, I'll tell you that. Again, more on him in a minute. And then Stepaniak, the first thing about him, well, a couple things I wanted to mention this. I saw this on Twitter yesterday, and this caught my attention. This is from the NFL Draft Twitter account. Top performers in the bench press among NFL Combine offensive linemen. Number four on the list, Jake Hansen, 33 reps. Number two on the list, Simon Stepaniak, 37 reps. So number two and number four strongest bench press performers at the Combine. And that's kind of the first thing that jumps out at you about Stepaniak. I mean, strong as a bull. strong, really strong, mean. This guy's a fighter. I see a little TJ Lang in him. I say that as a positive. I see a little TJ Lang in this kid. He wants to kick your ass. And you love that in an offensive lineman, particularly an interior offensive lineman. Now, the drawbacks, he's not a great athlete. He's probably the weakest athlete of the three offensive linemen selected in the sixth. He did tear his ACL in a Gator Bowl practice in December, so you wonder if he'll be an IR candidate. You wonder if he'll even, if the Packers will basically just stash him on injured reserve for the season. That seems like a possibility at this point. And then the Packers went back over to the defensive side of the ball with both their seventh round choices. The first of those was TCU safety Vernon Scott, taken with the 236th overall selection. Now, I'll be honest, it was pretty hard to find a lot of info on Scott. I couldn't find much. I went to Twitter and said, can anybody find a scouting report? I can't find shit. Like, NFL.com even didn't write one on him. If they did, I didn't see it online. So it took a minute to get some info on him, but, you know, by all accounts, once I did sort of start finding stuff, he's a pretty good athlete. I do have some statistics for him. These are from the Packers.com write-up. He became a full-time starter for the first time this past season for the Horned Frogs. Starting 10 games and ranking fourth on his team with 44 tackles, he broke up seven passes and had a 98-yard interception return for a touchdown against Oklahoma. So I picked off Jalen Hurts. You got to like that. So, by all accounts, he's a pretty good athlete. One thing you kind of hear about him over and over again. And the Packers, it seems like they think he'll be able to line up at multiple spots should he be able to see the field. Because let's be honest, he's going to have to become a special teams demon first to see the field. I mean, the safety group with Amos and Savage, you know, and not to mention Raven Green, and then you have Will Redmond. So he's fifth on the depth chart. It's going to take a lot for Vernon Scott to see the field on defense, but I do think there's some special teams value there because of his athleticism, for sure. And then Green Bay closed out its 2020 draft, again, the most hated draft in the history of Earth, by taking Miami defensive end. When I say that, I don't mean hated by me. I'll give my thoughts here at the end of the show, but I'm talking about as far as the analysts go. Closed out the draft by taking Miami defensive end Jonathan Garvin with the 242nd overall choice. Talk a little bit about Garvin here. 6'4", 263 pounds. So you would think, I mean, right away when you look at that, you go, he's probably not going to be a defensive end for the Packers. He's probably going to end up being an outside linebacker, I would think. Maybe you could use him inside and some sub-packages stuff on the line, but I think he'll start out mostly working off the edge. It's really an interesting pick. You know, some of the stuff I had read pre-draft had him as high as a fourth-round pick. So you got to like that. And when you watch him, I mean, the burst is there. The closing speed is there. He shows flashes of being really, really good. And he's so young. He doesn't even turn 21 until July. So when you factor that in, I mean, you become even more excited. Of course, his age also, you know, it means he's raw. He needs to work on his overall technique, needs to become more consistent with his jump at the snap, and just kind of more consistent overall as a ball player. But isn't Green Bay the perfect situation for a guy like that? Who better to watch and learn from than the Smiths? You know, there's no rush to get Garvin on the field. He can sit and watch those guys and learn, and those guys are both so good and so consistent as far as their effort and their work, especially Zadarius, as far as his effort, his intensity, work ethic, all that stuff. It's great. He's a great guy for Garvin to watch and learn from. I really like that pairing. And I did want to, you know, and I didn't mention some of the sizes on these guys. I think I mentioned Runyon. I'm going to go backtrack here a little bit. Hansen is 6'4", 303 pounds. Stepaniak is 6'4", 313. And Scott is 6'2", 206. So I did want to give some size numbers on those guys. I know I mentioned Runyon and Garvin, and my guy Kamal, but I wanted to mention the other three. Because I'm a completist, you know? So, clearly, Gutekunst, let's talk about the picks overall now and what they mean. He was focused on addressing, obviously, the offensive line on the offensive side of the ball, and then the front seven on defense. As five of the six picks went to those areas. Better late than never, I guess. Still didn't take a single defensive lineman. did not take a single D lineman this weekend. That is, I do have more on that coming up later in the show, though. I think Martin, I'll start with Martin. I think he has a chance to win the other starting inside linebacker spot opposite Christian Kirksey. I really do. He'll be in that mix with Curtis Bolton and Oren Burks. I mean, one of those three guys, and I don't know, the Packers don't run a lot of base, but as far as just from, you know, looking at it from a 3-4 perspective, I think he's got a shot to win the job. Yeah. I mean, at least he's got a 1-3 chance, and I think there's definitely some potential there with Kamal Martin. I'm not just saying that as a homer. Mm-hmm. You know, I watched this guy play. I watched every game he played in college, so I feel that there's something there. And then I wanted to talk about the offensive lineman, Hanson. Hanson is the one, you probably could tell by now, he's the one who excites me the most. I think there's a really good chance he's the starting center for this team in 2021. With Corey Linsley going into the final year of his contract. And at this point, you know, the Packers have much more pressing needs as far as who to re-sign. They have to re-sign Kenny Clark. They have to re-sign Bakhtiari. Do they bring Aaron Jones back? Do they bring Kevin King back? I would think Linsley's pretty low on that priority list. You know, he's nearing 30. I mean, I would think, yeah, I think there's a really good chance that Jake Hanson's going to be the starting center for this team. And I feel pretty good about his potential, especially if he has a year to sit and learn and watch Linsley. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if either Runyon or Stepaniak, if one of those two is the starting right guard in 2021. I feel like probably Runyon, because, you know, Stepaniak is going to be set back due to the injury. I do think he'll end up being on IR, or at the very least the PUP list, to start the season. So he'll be behind as far as his, you know, he'll be behind the learning curve. But in Runyon, I think there's a chance Runyon could be the starting right guard in 2021. Yeah. If you look at Billy Turner's contract, it's pretty easy for the Packers to get out from under it after this season. You know, if they wanted to shift, well, you know, if they want to shift, and clearly it looks like that's the thing with these three offensive linemen. You see the same things. Big, strong, powerful, good punch. It feels, you know what I mean, like the beginnings of a shift on the offensive line. I think gone are the days of the pass blocking finesse, and I don't say finesse as a curse word. You know, the lines that are built to protect the quarterback. It feels like they're going in a different way up front. How does Billy Turner fit into that? You know, I think there's a good chance he could be released after this season. Or if the Rick Wagner thing bombs out, do they maybe release Wagner, give Billy Turner a shot at right tackle, and, you know, slide Runyon to guard? That could be a possibility, too. Definitely a possibility. I think one thing I was a little disappointed, that they didn't take any sort of right tackle of the future. They got three inside guys, three guard centers, but no tackles. No tackle of the future to groom behind Rick Wagner. So that was a little disappointing. I will admit that. But, you know, it feels to me like Green Bay got... looking at these three linemen, at the very least, they got at least one future starter. Maybe two. And some valuable future depth. I like that. I really like those three offensive linemen they picked. When you look at Scott, he has a chance to stick as safety depth and value on special teams. And Garvin, as I talked about, will likely be the number four outside linebacker and is exactly the type of player I was hoping they'd add at that spot this weekend. You know, again, a guy who doesn't have to play right away. Maybe he's got some kinks that need to be ironed out, but a guy who can sit behind the Smiths and watch and learn and grow. I like that pick. I'll say this. I think there's a chance that in 2-3 years, Garvin ends up being one of the better picks from this class. I'll go out on that limb. Even though he was a seventh rounder right near the end of the draft, I like that pick. You know, so before I get to the big picture portion of the show and tell you what all of this means, I did want to talk about some other interesting ramifications coming out of this draft. Interesting ramifications from the draft. So first, I think it's pretty clear Lane Taylor isn't going to be a Packer much longer. You know, by drafting Hanson and Runyon and Stepaniak, Green Bay now has six. You heard me right. Six backup guard centers on the roster. That spot to Green Bay is what the tight end position is to the Bears. Bears drafted another tight end. They have 10 tight ends on their roster. Go look at the Bears roster. I'm not making that up. They have 10 tight ends. That's insanity. What I don't even know what to say about that. But as always, the Bears still suck. So back to, I guess it's not a surprise, right? If they suck, they're going to make sucky decisions. So yeah, the six on the roster right now, Lane Taylor, Lucas Patrick, the three aforementioned draft picks, and then Cole Madison. So at this point, there just isn't a need for Lane Taylor and a somewhat sizable salary on the roster anymore. If you look at Lane Taylor's salary for this year, he's got a $3.8 million base with a $250,000 workout. Oh, my kids are running around upstairs. It sounds like a zoo up there. He's got a $3.8 million base salary. He's got a workout option, a workout bonus of $250,000. The Packers would save that as well. And then the $62,500 in-game roster bonus is total. That's a nice way of saying, I threw a lot of numbers at you there. I probably could have done this easier. The Packers will save $4.1 million if they are to release Lane Taylor some point soon. That seems important, doesn't it? That money gained would come in handy. Because the Packers, you know, they didn't take a single cornerback, mentioned tackle, mentioned D lineman, not a single player at any of those three spots this weekend, which is mind-blowing. But now that they haven't, you would think if they cut Lane Taylor, they would spend that money, you know, on one or potentially more of the following players: Tremont Williams, tackle Jared Veld here, maybe D lineman Snacks Harrison, wide receiver Taylor Gabriel, or cornerback Logan Ryan. It's easy to see one of those, one or maybe even two of those five players ending up in Green Bay now. Again, especially if they cut Taylor and get that $4.1 million to play with. I've talked before on the show about Tremont, Veld here, and Snacks all being post-draft options if the draft didn't shake out in Green Bay's favor at those positions, and well, here we are now. And then Gabriel and Ryan are new to my list, but I could definitely see the Packers giving them a call as well. I think if I was to rank those players, I would say Gabriel's probably last. It seems like they like their wide receivers. I have no idea why, but it seems like they do. And then probably Logan Ryan would be fourth on that list. Veld here, third. Because the thing with Veld here is, I mentioned this on a recent episode, I can't remember which one, but they already have a backup right tackle. It's Billy Turner. And especially now with the glut of interior offensive linemen they have, as far as depth goes, if, say, Rick Wagner were to get hurt or to suck, they could easily slide Billy Turner out there. Even without Lane Taylor on the roster anymore, you'd still have Patrick and the three draft picks and Cole Madison. I don't know if Cole Madison will make the team, but at least Patrick and a couple of those draft picks to choose from to slide in at guard. So Veld here to me, I mean, that's a possibility, but I put him third on the list. And then number two, I would say, is probably Tremont. Just because, you know, they do like Chandon Sullivan. Brian Gutekunst talked last night about even Darnell Savage being an option as far as the nickelback goes. I think Snacks Harrison is the most likely guy that they give a call to. They need help on the defensive line. Holy shit. Again, Kenny Clark is the only reliable player. Dean Lowry, first year of his new extension, was bad. Who else is there? Tyler Lancaster. I like Lancaster as a rotational piece, a backup. They tried him as a starter and it didn't work. Kingsley Keke showed some flashes. Again, you had to look really closely to see him. And then Montrevious Adams. I mean, how can you count on anything from Montrevious Adams at this point? If the light hasn't come on yet, I don't know. So it feels like they desperately need another defensive lineman. So I think Snacks is probably the most likely guy they call. Even if they don't cut Lane Taylor, but especially if they do cut Lane Taylor and they have, again, some extra money to play with. So, yeah. Okay, big picture time. 28 minutes in here. Feels like the right time. Feels about the right time to kind of tell you what this all meant. So what you saw this weekend was Gutekunst and head coach Matt LaFleur laying the initial groundwork for an infrastructure that will likely be totally different from what we've seen in Green Bay over the past 25-plus years. It's clear that the Packers want to become a run-first, power-running team, a physical, punch-you-in-the-face, beat-you-up type of club built for the cold weather in Titletown. Eventually, the phrase West Coast offense will be as extinct as the dinosaur around Lambeau Field. It's also obvious that they are planning on this building process taking at least a couple of years to complete. This weekend was focused mostly on beginning to shift the offense in that direction. Gutekunst basically saying as much on Friday night when he told reporters, we will scheme to the talent we have. Which was a nice way of saying we are bringing in players who do what Matt wants to do, not what Aaron Rodgers wants to do. Because I do believe those are two separate things. On that note, gone soon will be the meshing of what Aaron Rodgers is used to and what Matt LaFleur has brought to the table, and in its place will be LaFleur's vision and his vision only. I believe the Packers want to build up an infrastructure so solid and complete that by the time Jordan Love takes over at quarterback, be it 2022 or 2022 seems more likely to me, a team will be in place in all facets of the game good enough for him to win and win right away. Basically, they want to be the complete opposite of what most teams turning to young quarterbacks look like at the beginning of that process. Doing so comes at the expense of the present. Instead of going a route of teams like New Orleans and Baltimore who are focusing on the now, instead of focusing on adding one or two pieces to get a 13-3 team that was one game away from the Super Bowl over the hump, and instead of taking even one wide receiver in what is considered to be the deepest wide receiver class in draft history, Gutekunst and LaFleur have decided to take their currency from last season's incredible ride, the incredible wild carpet, magic carpet ride, and put it towards the future. They're doing so. They're willing to do so at the risk of alienating their two-time MVP, future Hall of Fame quarterback in the process. They're willing to end their relationship with that QB as well, as it seems like that is only a matter of time before it's over, and likely in a somewhat ugly manner at the very least. Now, if this gamble pays off, and make no mistake, this is an incredible, monumental gamble. We will look back at this weekend as the moment it all began. Not simply just the successful Jordan Love era, but in fact the beginning of a new era of successful Packers football as a whole. And Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur will join Curly Lambeau, Vince Lombardi, Ron Wolf, Mike Holmgren, Ted Thompson, and Mike McCarthy on the good side, the wonderful, great side of team history. And if it fails, this weekend we'll join 4th and 26, the 2015 NFC Championship game, and the selection of Tony Mandarich in the annals of all-time low moments in Packers history. Gutekunst will likely never be a general manager again, and it's likely LaFleur will never run an NFL team again. No pressure, gentlemen. No pressure at all. Okay, so that about wraps up this episode. Thanks to everyone who's been checking out my pre-draft and draft wrap-up podcasts. I hope you've all enjoyed them as much as I have making them. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a blast. I've loved all the whole process. It's been a lot of fun. I love learning about these players and you know, their backgrounds and who fits and who doesn't and watching the draft. I love it. It's all so much fun for me. When will I return? Well, I'll be honest, it'll likely be a minute before you hear from me again. This episode today marks my fifth in the last week. Can you believe that? My fifth episode of the last week. Draft preview, extravaganza, mock draft, wrapping up the Love pick, wrapping up the Dylan and DeGuara selections, and then this. It'll be my sixth for the month of April. That is, I mean, holy shit, that's a lot of lamps. And as you know, I never want to overload you with too much lamps. Believe it or not, that is possible. Now, if something huge happens, of course that will change. But otherwise, yeah, I would think it'll be at least a couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks before I'm back here. There obviously aren't any OTAs or minicamps or anything because of this pandemic, so I may just start planning my off-season stuff and getting into that next. I've got some fun off-the-wall ideas I'm tossing around, and hopefully I can get to those fairly soon here. Stay tuned. So until next time, whenever that may be, I am Chris Lempesis. This has been Lemp's Talkin' Pack. Packer Nation, I love you from the bottom of my heart. Stay safe out there in this crazy world. And as always, go Pack, go.